Gone are the days of knights and chivalry, and yet that hasn't changed God's vision of you as a man of valor. Today, pornography is a simple mouse click away, and sexual addiction is at an epidemic level. Dr. Mark Laser is an internationally known author and speaker, the leading Christian authority on sexual addiction, and the host of Faithful and True's online radio production, The Men of Valor Program. Here now is Dr. Mark Laser.
Welcome to the Men of Valor program. Today we're in a series, Randy, where we're giving definitions of certain words that are part of the vocabulary or language of recovery or the healing journey.
Well, and you've jump-started us, Mark, and we're off to a good start over the past couple of shows here in helping to define and understand what so many of these terms mean.
We hope we're helping to understand. We might be contributing to confusion. I'm not sure.
Well, I think we should just keep the ball rolling and see where it takes us.
Okay. Well, we're in the C's. We ended the last show with crosstalk, and we're taking this list roughly from the back of the workbook called The Life Guide for Men. This list of vocabulary words is also at the end of the other workbooks in that series, the Life Guide
for Spouses,
the Life Guide for Women, and so forth. So I just think it's important for all of us when we're trying to communicate and communicate on an intimacy level and also participate in accountability groups to be on the same page in terms of certain terms. I noticed last night at our Tuesday night men's group that we had a couple of new guys. They had not been to a meeting before, a group before. They hadn't been to our workshop before. And even in their check-ins, the men were starting to throw around certain terms, which you could just see on their face. They were kind of confused about what was being talked about. So, and I think also as we understand terms, it helps us to understand elements of the healing journey or recovery. And So we hope that this series is being helpful to people about how to talk to each other, really.
Well, I think that statement right there gives the series relevance in the fact that here were two guys that have not spent a substantial amount of time in this environment or in their recovery even to fully understand what these terms all mean.
That is right. So, like I said, we're in the C's, which means we got a whole lot of letters to go.
Well, let's jump into it,
We should jump into some of these words. The first word that comes up in the list today is the word cruising. When we talk about cruising in sexual addiction recovery, for sure, we're talking about part of a ritual that some addicts, not all, get into, where they are kind of out and about in the world, and they are actually intentionally or somewhat even unconsciously looking for sexual triggers. So they know that when they see a sexual trigger, it raises their sexual arousal, that raises adrenaline. So they're looking for stuff. Cruising is when you're looking for stuff. Obviously, if you're at a bar or maybe a health club or wherever, you could be cruising and looking for potential partners. And that may get you involved in conversation with those partners and so forth. But cruising is like we used to talk about on Friday night in a small town, kind of driving up and down Main Street, you know, looking for some activity or some...
Looking for some action.
Some action, so to speak.
So cruising itself can have levels of severity. By that I mean can be the casual... let's go driving around and see if we run into some, attractive women, or it could be the more serious intent of cruising certain sections of town looking for professional prostitutes.
Women of the night, so
women
to speak.
Of the night, yeah.
We don't use the word prostitute on this show, Randy.
We don't? Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, you might be right. I think that's getting slightly older in the sense that, these days prostitutes have, their own websites. So, and then, a lot of times guys are engaging prostitutes on some of the social media sites like, Craigslist and so forth. But there, again, you might be cruising the internet.
That's what I was just going to say. Could you still take that term of cruising and apply it to, being on the internet?
That is right. You could be cruising the internet. And I know a lot of guys who get into trouble because they basically start out by doing a web search for something legitimate, perhaps even related to work. And in the process of surfing, which is maybe a more modern computer term for cruising, we're kind of looking for something, and we may even accidentally, in some cases, find stuff that gives us a sense of sexual arousal.
Okay. So how do we follow up on cruising then?
Well, how do you follow up on cruising? The next word in the list is actually related to cruising. I mean, cruising is part of... for an addict, their addiction cycle. The next word in the list is cycle. And one of the things that happened early on in our sex addiction movement was the fact that the founder of the field, Dr. Patrick Carnes, for really the first time described the sexual addiction cycle. But as he began to understand that for sex addicts, I think the idea of a cycle can be applied to a lot of different things. It's where you basically start with the idea of something. Sex addicts start with the idea of sex or being sexual. That leads them to a ritual. Ritual is any kind of behavior that takes them from the thought of an activity to the activity itself. When they get through the ritual, which can be short or long, then they will get to actually the acting out behavior. The acting out behavior then leads them to that feeling of despair. I did it again. I didn't want to do it. I'm a bad and worthless person. That shame or that sense of guilt leads them back to the preoccupation with the behavior, because the preoccupation or the fantasy itself can bring with it neurochemistry that lifts them out of the despair. And that's why we say it's kind of like a vicious cycle.
It brings you to the top of the cycle again, doesn't
right,
it?
That's right. And I think it can apply to so many different things. If you have the thought about chocolate chip cookies, let's say, whether you have an eating disorder or not, let's say you're going to the grocery store and you're doing your normal shopping for the week, and you have the idea of chocolate chip cookies, which may or may not be on your diet. I know it's certainly not on mine as a diabetic, but you got the idea on your mind, and you're going to be now cruising the aisles of the grocery store looking for various foods that you need for the week. And given the fact that you're preoccupied with chocolate chip cookies, you're certainly going to lock in on that section of the store that sells them. And then you're going to act out by buying them. That's part of your ritual. When you actually get home and eat half
the entire
package of chocolate chip cookies, that might lead you to some despair that you've done some behavior that's very negative for yourself. And I'm sorry to pick on the chocolate chip cookie lovers
because
of the world.
I do have a soft spot for chocolate chip cookies myself.
Well, so do I, which maybe is one of the reasons I think about it. But, you could take that and apply it to so many other addictions or so many other things. In fact, I think the average addict has a number of different cycles that may be going on at the same time. So you may have an addiction cycle with sex or some other substance or chemical or behavior. You can simultaneously have a cycle for like TV watching or work or eating or whatever else it is. So in other words, you could have four or five actual addiction cycles kind of linked together, and you can kind of switch back and forth to those cycles. I think one of the key words about a cycle is that it's unmanageable, meaning that you get kind of locked into them. And it's like Paul talks about in Romans 7:15, the good that I want to do, I don't do. The evil that I hate, that's what I do.
So back to our list of recovery words.
Well, okay, now we're going to get into the D's. And the The next word is really a classic word in our field. It is the word denial. You know, back when I was in treatment, there was this slogan that was popular, which is kind of hokey. But denial is not a river in Egypt. Do you remember
right,
that one?
Right.
Denial is a part of the sometimes conscious, sometimes unconscious way that we try to avoid responsibility for...
Not me.
I know you've never done it, Randy.
I was just trying to give a relevant example of denial.
Yes, well, you might be in denial about other things.
And cross-talking.
Yeah, and cross-talking, and I'm going to point those out to you later. But it could be simply denying reality, that something is not as bad as what other people might think it is. I think mainly when I think of denial, it's the inability to accept responsibility for negative, destructive, addictive, or whatever kind of behavior. So, you know, people who are in denial have a lot of rationalizations, minimizations, excuses, and that kind of thing. I think one of the things I like to point out to people when we're teaching about this is in the family or so forth that you grew up in, what was the level at which people were able to say they were sorry or they were able to take responsibility, own their own behavior? Most of us didn't grow up with systems that were that good at that. Denial obviously involves something else that I'm sure will come up on the list later, lying, because a lot of times if we're getting asked about something and we overtly lie about the fact that we were thinking something, doing something, you know, that is a form of denial.
I'd like to tap into some of your expertise and counseling experience as we're going through these words, and I think there's a value to us talking about them and describing them. But a few minutes ago when we were talking about cycle, and you're talking about the sexual addiction cycle, let's just take a minute and tell our listeners how you approach breaking that cycle when you're working with some of the clientele that we have come in here.
Well, you look at the four stops along the way of the cycle, the fantasy or preoccupation, the ritual, the acting out behaviors, and then also the despair. Really, our treatment plan or our healing plan really should be dealing with all four of those stops along the way. The one that we think about the most, obviously, is stopping the negative sexual behaviors. And that is something that we work on in terms of accountability and so forth, but we also work on in terms of a person's willingness to stop doing them. And that's a spiritual movement that we encourage the men to think about, that, you know, are you willing, in fact, to stop these behaviors that in most cases you've been using for years of your life to medicate feelings? And in accountability, we're going to be encouraging them to obviously go to meetings, go to counseling, do daily things that will remind them of their commitment to stop. The ritual behaviors are a matter of healthier boundaries and avoiding certain situations that get you into your ritual, avoiding certain trigger-rich environments and that kind of thing. It's also a matter of accountability, that your accountability group is holding you responsible for healthy boundaries against even ritual behaviors. The despair thing is sadness, depression, guilt, shame. And we feel that, you know, the main antidote to that is fellowship with other men. I mentioned already the couple of new guys that were in our Tuesday night group last night. And you could just tell, you know, coming into a group, the heaviness of their story was upon them. They were feeling in the early days of their recovery and having been discovered, and the contentious nature of their marriages at this point, that there was a heaviness or a shame or despair about them. And throughout the evening, as they were able to talk and tell a little bit about their story and hear the other men's stories, by the end of the group, you could just see that their burden was lighter. And I think that when we share our stories with other men, or for the women to share their stories with other women, that is a way of lifting shame and guilt and despair. Then finally, we get to the top of the cycle, which is where we should really start, and that's with the unwanted thoughts. And we have obviously a program about trying to understand the spiritual and emotional hunger and thirst that's underneath those fantasies. And we're going to be trying to teach people to find healthy ways to get their hunger and thirst for God really satisfied. So the Bible says those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, they will be satisfied. And so oftentimes, the one example I was using earlier about chocolate chip cookies is really kind of a food addiction. So that's a hunger. You know, the preoccupation with sexual activities is really a thirst or a hunger for some of the seven desires that Debbie and I talk about. So really, the antidote for that is to try to find answers for that hunger and thirst through a relationship with God and through a relationship with others. A lot of the answer to all four stops along the way comes back to what we hammer on so often here, and that's, you know, being in fellowship, being in accountability, sharing your story, being transparent, being vulnerable, those kinds of things.
Well, how did the rest of the group, when it was so obvious that these two guys were brand new last night, and I don't mean to take us off the track of today's show, mm-hmm. but I'm so intrigued by hearing that you had two new guys mm-hmm. and how there was confusion written all over their face by some of the terms that were being used with yeah. great comfort by the other members. How did that evolve during the course of the group meeting?
Well, there's times in the group when I feel like I'm a translator. So, you know, I'm constantly looking around the group to see how guys are doing. And if I look at somebody's face and see that they're not understanding or confused but maybe too embarrassed to ask, then I'll just pause for a moment and say, you know, so-and-so used a word. I just want to make sure you understand what that word means.
And that's why you pause with me all the time?
That's why I pause with you all the time, because, you know.
I can see the confusion.
Confusion is your middle name.
I think that's called being lost. I'm not quite sure.
Lost, confused.
Lost, okay. Yeah. Well, I think we have given ourselves the opportunity to feature one more term on today's show, and what would that be?
It's actually one of my favorite words going back to my acting out days. It's the word entitlement. One of the questions that I always used to ask myself in the early days of my recovery is that how could I, you know, a basically moral man, so I thought, and a Christian and an ordained pastor and, you know, certainly committed to family and loving Debbie and so forth, how could I have done the things that I did? Well, there's a lot of factors involved in, you know, the origins of my addiction and how I got farther down the road with it and how it developed. But I know that every addict, for sure, who's a Christian, has to justify to himself and maybe at times others why they were doing what they were doing. And so entitlement is that feeling that I deserve to do this. And usually the guy who feels entitled feels overworked, overstressed, underappreciated. They feel like victims at times, martyrs at times. They feel like they never get their needs met. And therefore, they take it upon themselves to meet their own needs. They feel like they are entitled to do them. I used to think at times that I had like a balance scale in my mind, and if I'd been overworking and doing lots of good things, then therefore I deserve to get some of my needs met. I felt entitled. In fact, when I speak about this in public, I have always used the example of one of the old slogans for McDonald's, which was, you deserve a break today. And entitlement is about deserving a break, getting your needs met, feeling like you've been left out and stuff like that. So I'm entitled, therefore, to do these things.
Although what's interesting when I listen to you talk about entitlement, there seems to also be a correlation between entitlement is leaving it in the individual's hands to determine that they deserve a break today. It's not right. Something that's being granted to them by another party.
Yeah, and these are, you know, frequently people that when they were even growing up were left alone, ignored, not treated well, perhaps even treated with criticism or overt forms of abuse. So, you know, when we say they act like victims or martyrs, in some of their cases, they actually are victims. And they did learn, perhaps even early on, that the only way they were going to get their needs met was to meet them themselves. And one of the core beliefs in sex addiction for many is no one else will meet my needs but me. A lot of us learned that growing up because we were getting otherwise ignored. So it's a skill that a lot of people develop even at age 3, 4, or 5, and that developmental place when we are a little bit more on the self-serving or selfish side of things. And then some of us just developmentally don't grow out of that. And it's like a 3-year-old having a temper tantrum. We believe that we do deserve to do certain nice things for ourselves.
It seems like a word that I'm sure that we will cross and talk about later on in this series. There seems to be a correlation, as I listen to you, that there would be a tie between entitlement and being narcissistic.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a tie. There's definitely something about this that is selfish. But I think also that entitlement simply sometimes forces people to do lots and lots of good things so that they therefore feel entitled to do some things for themselves, which in fact may be bad things. They may not be as self-centered always as a narcissist is, but certainly narcissists are, you know, one of the main features for a narcissist would be that they're entitled to get stuff for themselves.
Well, the more I was listening to you, the more I just forming a mental image that that the two seem to go hand in hand. Well, we have come to the end of today's program, and we want to thank you for listening to us. You have been listening to Dr. Mark Laser. This is the Men of Valor program, and I'm Randy Everett. I'm happy to be your co-host. We'd like to, first of all, thank the gentleman that we got to meet last week. Mark and I brought the Fight of Your Life event down to Boca Raton, Florida, and we had a standing room only crowd of men on that Saturday, and boy, the sheer blessing of that event was just really something to behold. So we'd like to thank all you gentlemen down in the Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton area. We'd also like to announce to you in the Florida area that we're coming back in April. We're going to come back to Lakeland, Florida, where our friend Pastor Jay Dennis is the head pastor at the First Baptist Church at the Mall. And on Saturday, April 25th, the Fight of Your Life event will be down there. And you can register for that event currently at churchatthemall.com, which is their website. So we're looking forward to that event very much. And again, we thank you for joining us today and look forward to coming back next week with more of these important terms of recovery.
You've been listening to the Men of Valor program with Dr. Mark Laser. For information about this program or to learn more about Faithful and True, visit us at faithfulandtrue.com. That's faithfulandtrue.com.